Good morning, good morning. This is Dave Mazza, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne will be back in 2 weeks. Well, since being sworn in last January, Oregon Attorney General John Kroger has taken on predatory lenders, challenged LNG terminal sightings, and headed up the investigation of Mayor Sam Adams. Now he's asking lawmakers to fund a new civil rights unit so he can hold those who break Oregon's civil rights laws more accountable. What would this new unit do that can't be done through other means or by the federal government, for example? How great is the need? And with lawmakers facing major cuts in education, social services, and public safety, can we afford it? Well, this morning on Voices from the Edge, Oregon Attorney General John Kroger joins us to answer these and other questions, and we hope you'll become part of the conversation by giving us a call at 503-231-8187. Thank you, Attorney General Kroger, for joining us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dave. Thanks a lot.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm just saying, you know, looking at what you've been doing the last few months, when are you going to get started? You just don't seem very busy.
Well, you know, we're doing our best. You know, we're doing something that I think is simple but profound, which is trying to do everything I promised I would do when I ran for the office. So we're pushing very aggressively on consumer protection. We're pushing very aggressively on the environment. We are pushing for a major overhaul and expansion of drug treatment and prevention programs in the state because I think that's a great way to fight crime. And we are moving, as you said, for refunding of the Civil Rights Enforcement Unit at the Oregon Department of Justice. So we've got a lot on our plate, and we'd love to talk about it.
Great. Well, let's in talking about the civil rights piece, let's start off first with giving folks kind of an idea of what the landscape is currently in terms of civil rights enforcement. What's in place? What are the remedies people have?
Well, Oregon has very good anti-discrimination laws. They're not perfect, but they're a reasonable starting point. Our challenge is this. Oregon's Department of Justice, the lawyers for the state, that's the department that I head, used to have a civil rights enforcement unit. But back in the 1980s, during the Reagan era, the funding was eliminated. So right now, I do not have a single attorney at the department focused on protecting civil rights and civil liberties. And I don't know what it means to be a Justice Department if part of your mission is not protecting civil rights and civil liberties. The truth of the matter is, though we've made great progress over the last 50 years, we do not have a perfectly just society. We do have huge challenges in the area of civil rights and civil liberties, and I want us to have lawyers who are ready to go into court at the drop of a hat to fight to protect those rights.
And for folks who aren't necessarily familiar with the judicial system and with civil rights law, are we talking here about civil prosecutions, criminal prosecutions? What you know, through what courts are we dealing with?
Well, right now, if someone experiences discrimination in the workplace or in public accommodation, they can file a complaint with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and they have an administrative process to try to help people reach a just result. And I'm a very strong supporter of that administrative system at the Bureau of Labor. And I know Commissioner Brad Avakian, who's our new Commissioner of Labor, is very committed to civil rights and will do everything with the powers that he's got to make progress. The challenge is that the commissioner is legally prohibited from filing lawsuits. Under our system of government, the only state official that can file a lawsuit against someone is the Attorney General. And in the area of civil rights and civil liberties, I believe that you can't truly make progress on really challenging issues unless you're willing and able to go into court. If you look at the history of the civil rights movement in this country, whether it's discrimination against people of color, discrimination against gays and lesbians, discrimination against women, we've really made progress because lawyers, both private lawyers and lawyers for the government, have been willing to go into a courtroom and fight for equality and fight for justice. And so as much as I support our effort to have administrative remedies at the Bureau of Labor, I believe we've got to be prepared to file major lawsuits and to challenge people when they don't live up to our society's standards of what's right.
Now, as you mentioned, private practitioners are often involved in handling civil rights litigation. Why can't the private sector simply deal with this? I mean, why does the state need to be getting involved as well? What's the difference in terms of you know, the outcomes?
Well, I think the difference in outcomes is profound, in part because of the nature of who's filing the lawsuit. When an individual files a lawsuit claiming that they were discriminated against, you know, lots of people say, oh, that person is just out for money. That person is angry because they were fired, or that person is angry because they didn't get the loan they wanted, and they're just out for money. When a government like the United States or the state of Oregon files a lawsuit claiming that a business or an individual has violated one of our citizens' civil rights, it's a very different matter, because it's obvious that we're not out just to make a buck. We're doing it because we think it's right and just. And so it's very important for private litigants who are challenging discrimination to have an ally in government who will fight alongside with them. And that is exactly what we intend to do.
And in the cases where the state is coming in and leading the prosecution, the remedies for the individuals affected, they still get some compensation out of this process?
Absolutely. In criminal cases, if there is a civil rights violation that would involve threats or violence or some other type of crime, then they would get restitution. Those cases are important because obviously only the government can charge someone with a crime. And so that's one of the reasons I think it's important to have a unit like this focusing on civil rights. For civil cases where we're filing a lawsuit, we wouldn't try to substitute, receiving money that ought to go to the victim. But we would push for things like court orders that can change institutions' behavior. You know, if you've got a big corporation that operates all over the nation or all over the globe, and they're engaging in discrimination, the administrative process may not deter them. But a very public lawsuit with the state fighting them to get them to change their behavior can have that impact and will deter others from violating civil rights and civil liberties. So what we're talking about here is a very important supplement to what we have. I think back in the 1980s, the funding was cut for civil rights enforcement at the Department of Justice, quite frankly, because a lot of people weren't focusing on the importance of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And when I ran for Attorney General, I talked about vigorous enforcement of all our laws. I want to enforce our consumer protection laws, our environmental laws. I want to enforce our civil rights laws and make it clear to people that they can't just violate the law in our state and get away with it.
Well, for those of you just tuning in, we're speaking this first half hour with Oregon Attorney General John Kroger about his wanting to restore the Civil Rights Unit of the Department of Justice. And if you want to join us in that conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we have Scott on the line. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, and it's a pleasure. Two questions that are somewhat related. Mr. Kroger, you took on Enron. I'm not sure exactly how. Maybe you could tell us. But here in the state of Oregon, Portland General Electric was a wholly owned subsidiary of Enron Corporation until after bankruptcy. One point that was made, it was that most companies that had contractual relationships to buy power from Enron, including public-owned utilities, end up suing Enron to basically undo the contracts and their financial obligations because of fraud. And the fraudulent trading took place right here at the World Trade Center in Portland. That was the Enron's trade desk. So my question is, will you do anything or consider looking into the idea that Portland General Electric was the only company, of course, its mother being Enron, that it did not sue Enron to disgorge these fraudulent gains? And then secondly, the taxes. It was reported in the Oregonian that over $500 million of taxes were collected from the ratepayers but never paid to the federal government. Would you be willing to look into that as well?
First of all, thanks for calling about the Enron case. I was a federal prosecutor and was asked by the Justice Department to leave my job as a law professor at Lewis and Clark and return to the United States Department of Justice and be one of the prosecutors on the Enron case, and worked on the case for about a year in its very early stages, helping get the investigation underway and to indict some of the people who committed the very serious crimes there. PGE is now completely independent of Enron. On the tax issue, one of the most important things we did is is the legislature passed legislation saying that if a public utility like PGE withholds or charges money to customers in order to pay taxes, then every dime of that has to be paid over to the state. And that, I think, will prevent the tax issue. The challenge of us trying to get tax money out of Enron is there's no money there. The company was a bankrupt shell, and the federal government has gotten every dime I think it can out of the company. And so, you know, at this point, you're trying to squeeze money out of a rock. But the crimes that were committed there were very serious, and I think one of the most important things that the caller said was, a lot of Enron's crimes were right here in Oregon. Oregon was actually Enron's legal home. Every corporation in the United States is legally incorporated, legally headquartered in one of the 50 states. And Enron, though headquartered in Texas, was an Oregon corporation. They incorporated here. And they did that in part because they never thought we'd make them pay taxes, and they didn't, and because they thought no one would keep a close eye on them. So when I declared my candidacy for attorney general, I did it at Enron's former headquarters here in Portland, and I did that to send a message that I would be a real consumer watchdog. And I hope in my first 4 or 5 months in office we've lived up to that. We've done major suits against corporations like the Eli Lilly Pharmaceuticals Company for deceptive marketing of pharmaceuticals, and Countrywide Mortgage, where we got a great settlement against them for their predatory lending. So we're trying to do everything we can to hold big corporations accountable.
Thank you. Mr. Kroger, just one other question.
Yep.
Thank you, by the way. Turning the page, Vincent Bugliosi wrote a book, basically the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder, and one of the points was that after he stepped down from president, he lost immunity, and his contention in the book is that attorney general of any state or any district attorney of any county where some soldier has lost their lives, specifically in Iraq, would be subject to either murder charges or conspiracy charges, and he's offered to himself and a team of lawyers to help any attorney general or DA to go forward with that prosecution. Would you be willing to consider that and to read the book, and what's your comment?
You know, he actually sent me a copy of the book recently, and I have to admit that I have not yet read it, in part because I take home a big stack of reading for work every night, and I'm pretty focused on my immediate goals in the office. I think the answer, to put it simply, is that not a single prosecutor in the country has taken him up on his offer, and that's not because people support President Bush or like what President Bush did or believe that the war was right, but that legally the president's decision to take the country to war in Iraq, however irresponsible and however poorly thought out, doesn't satisfy the legal test for murder in most jurisdictions. And so that is why, I quite frankly would not bring a case like that, just because legally it doesn't fit the test for what an intentional taking of a human life requires.
That's not always
a politically popular thing to say, but legally that's the responsible thing to tell you.
Thanks, Scott, for that. We got to move on because we have another caller on the line. And again, if you want to join us in this conversation, we're talking with Oregon Attorney General John Kroger about his request to revive the Civil Rights Unit of the Department of Justice. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, David. It's Jeff in North Portland. Thanks for taking my call. And, hey, congratulations on the get. That would be our Attorney General as an interviewee. Hello, Mr. Attorney General. Thank you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I have a concern, though. Historically, some of the most egregious violations of civil rights, even to this day, have been the inequities in pay between men and women.
Yes.
For the very same work they perform, women are still paid a mere 77 cents on every dollar given to a man. I suppose, and perhaps you will elucidate the answer, I suppose that this proposed civil rights division will go against this horrible egregious trend in civil rights. And could you, I'll take the answer off there, but could you limb out how you could go about that, whether that could be precedent setting, even at the federal level? Thank you, Mr. Attorney General. Thank you, David, so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, that's a very important and salient point. When you think about civil rights, certainly gender is one of the issues where our country has not achieved equality, and you can see that in disparity of pay between people who do equal work. Women are still paid less. The goal we would have in that area is to identify employers who refuse to pay women equally for men despite doing equal work. And if we had a civil rights unit and we identified companies like that, we would take them to court. That's precisely the kind of work that I would like us to be doing here at the Oregon Department of Justice. Gender equity is an issue that has been at the forefront of civil rights since the 1960s, and we have a long way to go. And those discrepancies in payment that Jeff is talking about are very real. They don't get talked about a lot, but extraordinarily important.
And let's talk about another area of civil rights that's obvious. Well, and you actually raised it at the beginning of this conversation, of course, are those involving race. And oftentimes, one of the, for example, here in Portland, one of the largest problems is racial profiling, not by private individuals, but by public bodies. Would this civil rights unit be prosecuting or taking to court public bodies that were engaged in discriminatory practices, like police departments that engage in racial profiling?
We are engaged right now in trying to figure out precisely what our authority is to bring legal actions against other governmental departments. But the simple answer is yes. If anyone violates the law in the state, we would work to find ways to make sure that those practices are stopped and to hold people accountable. And that may require some legislative changes in addition to having a civil rights unit. And that is something I'm very eager to explore in the future. I said at the outset that I thought we had pretty good laws on the books in our state, but not perfect laws. And one of the things I would hope our civil rights unit would explore is working with the legislature and civil rights advocates to find ways that we can strengthen the civil rights laws in the state. Certainly, if any governmental entity is violating the law, then we will do everything we can to hold them accountable. When I was a federal prosecutor, I worked for a time in New York City, and one of the cases my office brought, I was not personally involved in it, but my office was involved, was the Abner Louima case, which involved prosecution of police officers for torturing someone who was in custody. And certainly if there is behavior by anyone that violates the law like that, we will act swiftly.
What about if it's at the state level, say the Oregon State Police? You're, as Attorney General, you also represent the state. Does that create some conflict issues that would need to be resolved with legislation?
It doesn't create a conflict, but it changes how you bring about the progress. If a part of state government is violating the law, as Attorney General, I don't have the power to sue them, but I'm their lawyer. And so if you're someone's lawyer and you know that they're violating the law, you have an obligation to get them into compliance with the law. And that is my obligation. So if, say, the state police or any other agency of government, including my own, if it came to my attention that we were violating the law, we would do an internal investigation. And we would work with them to correct the problem immediately and to make recompense to the people who were harmed. The primary mission of the Department of Justice is justice. That's what our title is. That's what we're about. And so we're very committed, not just to winning cases or defending the government or winning in court, but making sure that justice is done in our society. And that's a very broad mission, but it's an extraordinarily important one. And that's what we pride ourselves on.
Well, I know you're going to have to leave here in a couple of minutes, but we're going to try to get another caller or two in because
Great.
They have questions for you. So let's go back to the phone lines. And good morning, caller. You're on the air, and I'm going to ask you to keep the question fast, quick.
Is that me?
That's you, caller.
Okay, hi. I believe there's about 15,000 to 20,000 Oregon medical marijuana card holders now in the state of Oregon. And I know that employers have the right to discriminate against us, even though we may not ever have been caught on the workplace high or using medical marijuana or anything like that. Simply the fact that we are a cardholder is enough to discriminate against us, deny us or employment, or fire us. I believe that's a civil rights issue. Other people who use alcohol or are addicted to pain-killing medications that are legal, they could be impaired potentially, right? But they are not discriminated against. I want to know, what do you think, and can we depend on you to defend our civil rights?
Go ahead, Attorney General.
Sure. First of all, medical marijuana is the law in the state, and obviously I'm deeply committed to make sure the law is followed. I think I'd probably have to have a longer conversation with the caller and would encourage him to call my office. The laws are supposed to protect people who are legally using marijuana under the laws of the state for a medical condition. And if there is discrimination that violates the law, we would want to know about it. So if we could get the caller to call my office and ask for Julie Rutherford at the Department of Justice, we'd love to have that conversation further.
Great. And, well, why don't you just go ahead and give that number out?
I don't have Julie's number right out hand.
Folks can log on, though, right to...
It's 503-378-6002.
Great. Well, let's try one more caller before you have to go. We'll go back to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air, and we ask you to make the question really quick and fast here.
All right. Thank you. In March, you attended a meeting of American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is a right-wing pro-Israel organization. And the hallmark of AIPAC and Israel's behavior is defiance of international law and operating with impunity in its behavior against the Palestinians. And so how do you reconcile your attendance when you're the attorney general who's, you know, sworn to uphold law, who here's an organization that is doing the opposite?
Okay, thank you, caller, for the question.
For the same reason that if I were invited to a meeting that was thrown by Friends of Palestine, I would certainly attend that as well. I try to go to meetings where I can learn something. I don't think AIPAC is violating the law. Many people disagree with what's happening in the Middle East. I personally would love to see a true two-state solution as quickly as possible. But, you know, shutting yourself off from dialogue isn't necessarily the answer.
Okay, well, I know we're almost out of time here. We've got to be going. But how much money are you looking at from the legislature for getting the Civil Rights Unit back up and running?
We are trying to start modestly because of the budget crisis. We're looking for a little over $300,000 a year to fund a prosecutor and an investigator just to get the unit going. And we've found a way to pay for that within our own current budget. So we're not asking for a new outlay. We're just asking to be able to use funds that we already have to support civil rights enforcement as well as the other things that we already do. And I think that's a responsible proposal, and I think it would be great for civil rights and civil liberties in the state.
Well, Attorney General Kroger, I really appreciate you taking the time out this morning to talk about this. And, of course, folks can certainly call your office or log in to the Attorney General's office website, which we have a link on with our website here at kbo.fm, and to find out more. And again, we appreciate all the work and appreciate you taking the time out to talk about this new development.
Thanks so much, Dave. If people go to our website, it's www.doj.state.or.us. And on that front page of our website, you'll see a button that says Support Civil Rights at the Department of Justice, and people can hit that link and get more information about what we're trying to do.
Great. Well, and, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't try to slip in this last question. Are we going to hear about the investigation on Mayor Sam Adams soon?
Alas, I have no comment
okay.
on the ongoing investigation.
Kind of thought that would be the response.
right so. Dave, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks now. Take care. We've been talking this morning with Oregon Attorney General John Kroger. Excuse me. I'm getting all choked up over that. Attorney John Kroger, who is attempting to restart the civil rights unit for the Oregon Department of Justice, which had been defunded back in the 1980s when certain political parties apparently felt it wasn't necessary to enforce civil rights laws any longer. So if you want to find out more about that, as I said, you can log on to kboo.fm/voicesfromtheedge. We have a link to the Attorney General's website, and it has a variety of things on there pertaining to that and other things that the Attorney General's office is currently doing. And I must say on the editorial side of things that regardless of how you feel about some of his positions, we are seeing at least an AG's office that is doing something much more than what his predecessor was doing. Well, before we go back to having a conversation about that and some other legal related items, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up this morning on KBOO and why you should never touch that dial once you've got it set at 90.7 FM or you've logged on to kboo.fm. Just keep that live stream going. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30, host Per Fagering speaks with Canadian journalist and author Eric Margolis about Afghanistan and other issues. At 10, it's headlines, interviews, and commentary on Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, we hear one of the attorneys for the founders of the Holy Land Foundation. Her client was just sentenced to 65 years in prison for charitable work serving Palestinians. Also, Dr. Mads Gilbert talks about the brutal humanitarian conditions for hundreds of thousands of displaced Tamil people in Sri Lanka. And financial consultant Catherine Austin Fitz discusses participatory budgeting and financial permaculture. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ed Goldberg speaks with Chris Cleave, author of Little Bee. And at 11:30, students from the Pulse of Portland Music Project at Renaissance Arts Academy talks about how they feel about music, school, culture, and some of the interviews they have done with various Portland artists. All that and more coming up this morning on KBOO, so stay tuned. Well, we've been spent the first half hour with Attorney General John Kroger, who unfortunately had to go for another meeting, but we're basically talking about the idea of reviving the civil rights unit that had been defunded by the Oregon legislature back in the 1880s, in the 1980s. It only seems like it was a century ago. But clearly, you know, one of the things we're looking at right now is trying to get the state back involved in that way. It's not as if, you know, we haven't had, you know, a growing problem with discrimination. And, you know, the legislature needs to hear from us, so I would certainly encourage folks. And obviously the other big legal issue or legal-related issue in the news, of course, is the President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court. He has chosen Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who would qualify as the first Latina to serve on the court, first Hispanic general to serve on the court. And obviously now the political posturing is already taking place around that. The Republicans, of course, find themselves in sort of the difficult situation of really wanting to oppose this nominee, as they would any nominee coming out of President Obama or the Democrats. At the same time, they really don't want to alienate the Latino voters. In their spiral downwards, the Republicans continue to say that they want to regain the Latino vote that they had enjoyed under George Bush. Of course, they don't note that they also lost that vote while under George Bush as well, since his policies managed to alienate quite a few of them, and it wasn't helped, of course, by John McCain's campaign either. But, you know, so there's sort of this ongoing, one more dynamic, one more tension within the Republican Party as they try to figure out, you know, are they going to represent more than just a handful of southern states or not? And, of course, on the other side now, it's starting to come out that there are some concerns by folks who feel that Sotomayor may not be a firm vote in protecting Roe versus Wade. So it appears, at least on first blush here, and presumably we'll be finding out more as this process unfolds, that Obama has once again sort of moved to the center on things. And while, yes, it's great to be changing the composition of the court, there's also the question of how about the, you know, the ideological bend of the court. We're hoping, of course, that Sotomayor will actually prove to be more liberal than at least some of the comments indicate. But with the situation we have in the court right now, being the white guy, Harvard, Yale club, any change is obviously positive. Well, let's you know, one of the questions, of course, that the pundits are throwing out there is, particularly the right pundits, I would say, or the right-wing pundits, they're not the right pundits by any means, of course, is the question of what do we do in terms of how do you judge a Supreme Court nominee? Should it be reflective of trying to make the court reflect demographically the country, or should it be someone who's, I believe I heard one Republican senator the other day saying he wants candidates who are like Lady Justice, that's his term, not mine, wearing a blindfold, which of course strikes a, it makes it an interesting metaphor for the law that you want them to be totally blindfolded and unaware of what's going on. How much is that, you know, how do you balance that? Where do you think about that? So give us a call at 503-231-8187 and let's hear what you happen to think about that. Should we be trying to demographically change the court? Should we be strictly concerned with legal acumen? Or is that all just a false dichotomy in terms of the discussion? Because is it really a question not so much of changing the demographics, but casting the net broader than we have in the past? Because, you know, if all you end up looking for, or all you end up are willing to put on the selection list are, you know, guys from Yale or Harvard, then you end up with a court packed with people from Yale and Harvard. And so is it just a matter of being more realistic about the recruitment process rather than trying to set particular goals as to who gets put in? So let's hear what you think about that. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Or if you want to talk a little bit more about John Kroger's proposal to revive the Civil Rights Unit, which, you know, it's hard to, I think, to come up with reasons not to do that. The question is, of course, just deciding how aggressively they will use that unit. I think, you know, we heard some good things this morning from the Attorney General, who has certainly expressed a willingness to use the law as vigorously as he feels permitted to do and to pursue certain things that have not been pursued in the past, similar to weighing in with LNG and stuff like that. But, you know, we also need to see, again, how willing he is to go after the public bodies. He did say this morning, of course, that, you know, there might be some legislation necessary to make those changes. But that seems to me really be the crux of the matter, because so much of what's happening is at that local level. And frankly, not to let the private sector off the hook, because by no means should they be let off the hook. But the public sector has been escaping too often with some of this, as evidenced by, as you know, anyone who listens to this show on a regular basis. Joanne and I both have repeatedly talked about, and will continue to talk about, the fact that our city and our county continues to engage in racial profiling. And while they're really good at putting together committees and blue ribbon panels and issuing reports and nodding their heads concerned that racial profiling is occurring, there doesn't seem much happening beyond that. And then we still end up with these incidents with police officers, you know, using racial profiling to engage in certain tactics, as well as, of course, other things that were other problems we're having with the police. And obviously, our own ability at our local level to control this has proven fruitless. The Civil Police Civilian Review Board, which was Gary Blackmer's Frankenstein monster that he sewed together from disparate parts, has continued to be pretty ineffectual in dealing with that. Well, Rich is waving at me and waving a finger. Fortunately, it's not the finger that would make me angry, but it means, I guess, we have a caller on the line. So let's go back to the phone lines and see what they want to say. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Dave.
Hey.
Hey, did I hear you say that if you're totally blind, you're not aware of what's going on?
No, I said if lady... No. What
That's
I said...
Exactly what you said, Dave.
I was quoting a Republican lawmaker who said that what they wanted in terms of a Supreme Court nominee who was someone who was like Lady Justice, who was totally blind to what was going on, just focused on the law.
Yeah, then after that you followed up by saying, yeah, if you're totally blind, you're not aware of what's going on.
Well, if I said that, then I was not making an attempt. I was not attempting to make any sort of insult towards sightless people.
Okay, bigot.
Well, okay. I guess that's the end of that conversation. If I have made a misstatement of some sort, and I don't think I did, my apologies go out there. But clearly the idea being that, you know, people talk about that Republican senator talking about the idea that the Supreme Court should somehow be have these blinders on in terms of the ones they put on, you know, that restrict one's ability to see what's around them or not really be immersed in the world, which, of course, is the assumption that somehow the law is this set of rules that stand apart from life, which is as 180 degrees out from reality. The law is based, it's supposed to be a living document, and of course is largely based, excuse me, on the concept that, you know, what do we as a reasonable society do, and how can one judge what a reasonable society is unless one is out there engaged and able to have those experiences. So it, again, it seems like, you know, sort of a really ridiculous sort of set of criteria that the Republicans are out there. And my guess is really is something that has more to do with simply wanting to obstruct the process of getting a new nominee on the court than it does with any real deep philosophical feelings, because when it comes to their particular set of issues, they certainly seem glad to be wanting to make sure that their justices reflect that. So, anyhow, enough of my backtracking on what may or may not have been a misstatement. Give us a call at 503-231-8187 if you want to comment on John Kroger's plans for the new civil rights unit. He wants about $300,000, hire a prosecutor and an investigator who would start the process off to, in order to, and actually I should say that he has already found the money for that. He basically wants the authorization to fund it. And presumably if this proves to be an area where there is needed for that sort of state intervention, then he might need to expand the budget. But at this point, it would just be getting the authorization. Well, let's go back to the phone lines where we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, I just wanted to call and say it's really unfortunate that we have people that may dislike you and want to make some, just have a reason to make some call and say something totally out of context. I'm sure any intelligent person listening to you understood exactly where you were coming from with that statement about Lady Liberty.
Well, thank you very much. And I actually don't have a problem with people not liking me. I mean, that's, if you go through life without having made a few enemies, you probably, you know, haven't been getting out there and mixing things up enough. So that's not a problem. But I agree, it's nice to be engaged with people who don't like you in a constructive way rather than just have them snipe at you.
Well, it keeps you thinking, that's for sure.
That's right. That's right. Keeps me on my toes this morning at any rate. But I appreciate the kind words.
Thanks.
All right. You have a good one now. Well, again, we've got about 15 minutes left, and we're talking civil rights here. And if you want to talk about the Attorney General's proposal, talk about the Supreme Court nominee, give us a call at 503-231-8187, and we're going back to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. I noticed on AM talk radio, which I am embarrassed to have listened to a couple of times.
We forgive you.
There's a big push, at least from whoever runs AM radio, against our current nomination. But what's amazing to me is that show after show has the exact same talking points, and none of them have identified anything that was in yesterday's Oregonian, for instance, that said that she was originally appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush to her federal position. I was just wondering if you could comment at all on where that kind of opposition would come from and why it would be so one-sided in terms of an attack against her.
You're talking about the talking points that are circulating around for the press, where that's coming out of?
Talking points for the right-wing talk show press, yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, I know that, and I'm, you know, I apologize for not being able to pull up the name out of my brain at this moment, but there has been reports already about a political action committee that's, you know, deeply linked in with the right that began almost immediately issuing out a list of talking points to not only Republican senators, but also to their friends in the press, Fox News and that group, that's sort of, yeah, laying out these same sets of questions. Most of that centered around some comments she had made in particular about being able to better relate to and make better decisions based on her experiences as a Latina as compared to a white male. And, of course, it was taken out of context. It was a presentation, a speech she was making at some public event, which was talking in a much broader context about some of the things we've just been talking about, the fact that, you know, the law requires, really rests upon the idea that people are making their decisions rooted in reality as opposed to some very isolated, esoteric set of rules. And they've, you know, done the cherry picking out and put this together. We've heard this now from the Republican senators who are already starting to march in lockstep. And also, again, like I say, Fox News and some of the others who are really good at just retyping the press releases from the right-wing think tanks and then saying that's journalism. But I will definitely go back and find that and put that on our website for folks who are interested. It's just a matter of sometimes the data retrieval doesn't always work out. But thanks for raising that question. It's a good one, and people need to, particularly right now, to be asking about, gee, how come all these questions we're hearing and these statements sound exactly alike, and why is that so?
Right.
Good. You have a good day now.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. And again, you wanted to give us a call, talk about either Attorney John Kroger's ideas on the Civil Rights Division, which we just got done talking with the Attorney General in the first half hour, or if you want to talk about the new Supreme Court nominee that would represent the first Hispanic on the court and would increase the number of women on the court, double the number of women on the court, although still leaving them in a very sad minority position. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. And I'm actually going to put that caller on hold for a minute because we also needed to just remind folks that next week we're going to be doing something on a very important event coming up. And that is my mind just went blank. Village building convergence, actually. Village building convergence, which starts June 5th through June 15th, is, I believe, the ending date. And for folks who may not be familiar with that, it's an attempt by the community to put together a variety of projects that gives the community voice, makes a more humane community. They do everything from painting intersections to native plant gardening, what have you. It's been going on now. This is the ninth year. It's going to be, it's been spreading in terms of its activity. Some folks may know the special project down on Sherritt Street in Selwood. There's one in the Hawthorne District, Sunnyside District as well, where they've, you know, fixed up an intersection, put out some outside functions, and what have you. Well, we're going to be talking with Mark Lakeman, who is the co-founder of the City Repair Project and also the coordinator of the Convergence. And we're not only going to talk about what's going on in terms of the event, but we're also going to talk a bit about how relevant is this in terms of when in the midst of an economic crisis, are these sort of projects really addressing the needs of the built environment and the community needs? Do they really give voice? Are we focusing in the right area at this time and place? So I really encourage folks to tune in next week. I think it'll be a really good conversation. You'll also learn about what's going to be some great stuff going on during that week. Now, having done that little plug for ourselves, we're going to go back to the phone lines where we have a caller on the line. And good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hello there, Dave.
Hi. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I just wanted to
briefly congratulate John Kroger on his innovative new program, his family law program.
Whoa, I'm sorry. It looks like we just lost another caller. Well, we're going to go back to our next caller, and hopefully we'll retrieve that lost voice there. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, Dave.
Hi.
Hey. I just wanted to comment on Obama's Supreme Court nominee.
Sure.
Okay. First off, I'd like to lead by saying that I'm a conservative Republican, so I probably disagree with almost everything you're saying.
That's okay. It's a free country.
But I just wanted to give you a little perspective. As a Republican and a conservative, I think that we should not oppose this nominee at all. I think that fellow conservatives should embrace her with open arms. The reason being, we're trading Ms. Sotomayor for Justice Souter, who turned out to be a great disappointment to the first George Bush in that he voted with the liberals most of the time. So given that, we're not trading a conservative for a liberal. I mean, the worst we could do is maintain the current ideological structure of the court. Okay, in addition to that, like you said, she may not be a diehard abortion activist, mm-hmm. you know, like other nominees potentially could be. So, I mean, I think, and, you know, and not to mention all the issues with her being a Hispanic, the Hispanic vote, you're absolutely right. The Republican Party needs the Hispanic vote. So, you know, I think that people should recognize it and take what comes and embrace this nominee.
Okay, well, let me, as long as we have you on the air here, and you mentioned the fact that, you know, there is the desire by many within your party to try to bring in not just the Hispanic vote, but really bring in many more people under the tent. Yet at the same time, there are members of your party and certain pundits who are, you know, saying, no, we want to be very, very strict in how we define what's being a Republican.
You know, no, you're right, but they're unrealistic. They're unrealistic.
So you're more the big tent kind of guy.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And because this is a big tent country, you know.
And what do you, how do you feel then about the role people like Rush Limbaugh are playing? I mean, do you feel that... do you just wish he'd go away, or do you think that, you know, it's unfortunate that he seems to have acquired sort of an unofficial mantle as the spokesperson for the party? Because obviously he's quoted he's getting quoted more than Michael Steele, and Steele actually apologizes to him, it seems, every time he says something that's contrary.
Well, that happened once. But I also think there's an effort to portray Limbaugh as the head of the Republican Party by the media. The fact remains that he's a talk show host. I mean, mm-hmm. he gets paid to rile people up and say incendiary things. I don't think he speaks for all Republicans. I agree with most of his basic premises, but, you know, I mean, there's room for leeway. And, I mean, I think that you can – I think Republicans can be an accepting, open party and appeal to – maybe even a majority of Americans, while still retaining their core values and not being exclusionary. And that has to happen with Hispanics, you know, in a big way. I mean, we have to, you know, be sensitive to their desires and recognize that we have a lot in common, you know, as conservatives and as they do, being Hispanics. I mean, there's a lot that we have in common, and we have to work on the similarities that we have with each other.
Okay. Well, look, we probably disagree on many things, but I'm certainly in agreement that what we need to be doing is figure out ways to be more inclusive and talk to people and, you know, move forward, recognizing we're all trying to move forward to some common good there. But I appreciate you calling and giving us sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Take care now. Well, again, this is Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza, and we're talking this morning. We had spent the first half hour talking with Oregon Attorney General John Kroger about his proposal to revive the Civil Rights Unit of the Oregon Department of Justice. He's asking, he's actually acquired $300,000 and is asking for the authority to hire a prosecutor and an investigator as the first step in being better armed to more aggressively enforce Oregon's civil rights laws. And if you have some ideas about that, we've still got a few minutes left. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. And let's go back to the phone line because Richard's pointing at me again. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Just a comment about the Supreme Court nominee.
Yes.
I'm pretty liberal-minded, but I know real conservative friends, and I feel that they're just brainwashed by the status quo that wants to stay in power. And what they want to do is turn it around to say, well, she's only being nominated because of affirmative action. But if put the shoe on the other foot and ask them, what if this conservative Christian went to court and they're supposed to have a jury of their peers, and they had, let's say, all gay activists, anarchists, the Christian conservative would say, hey, none of them reflect me, none of them are my peers, where let's at least have one conservative Christian. Oh, you're trying to believe in affirmative action. If the shoe was put on the other foot, they would insist on having someone to reflect their views. So by having a Hispanic and someone who is liberal-minded is logical. We need to have more of a rainbow status to reflect the view. If they're all just conservative white guys, and to say that a Hispanic is only being there because of affirmative action, and even if that was the case, there needs to be someone besides the conservative status quo to reflect the people out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's just all I wanted to say.
Well, thanks. And you're not getting any arguments from me on that count. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And again, the law is a living thing. It's supposed to be. And it's supposed to be reflective of the society we live in. And in order to be able to determine, what makes sense in terms of the law, the people making the decisions have to be part of that society, and that society is not composed of the alumni of Yale and Harvard.
Right.
So
right.
Thanks a lot for your call this morning. You have
Amen.
A good one.
Thank you.
Okay.
God bless.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in, I think, one more call before we call it a day here. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. It would be really ironic, I suppose, if a Democratic president would select someone who ends up not being pro-choice. My daughter, whose name happens to be Sonia, that was her first question. Is she pro-choice?
Mm-hmm.
I hope she doesn't swing. I mean, I've heard she would be the sixth Catholic on the court. I don't know what the percentage of Catholics in the U.S. is, but I doubt it's that high, two-thirds. But anyway.
It's high, but not there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for a Hispanic woman, and I thought she would be the nominee from the get-go because she fits. She's perfect. But I hope she is pro-choice.
Right. And I think, that the comments that have been sort of starting to percolate up are still relatively, general. There doesn't seem to be any clear-cut problems. And then there's also the question of whether or not it would then fly past the Democrats without being, she's...
Right.
If warning flags pop up there, so I guess we'll see as this unfolds.
Republicans probably won't go there because, but I couldn't agree with you more about the life experience being very important, that the idea that the law should be just people should be just interpreting what the founding fathers meant implies that they were some kind of godlike people who were perfect and
right.
foresaw all circumstances. I mean, obviously, we want to choose people who are really intelligent and really thoughtful and looking around, or being aware, they don't have to be able to see, but being fully aware of what's going on in the world and how things are changing.
Well,
and as you said, it's a fluid document.
Exactly. And I know one of the things that the right has latched onto was President Obama's suggestion that empathy is an important part of that, and somehow, no, it should be the law, empathy. And it should be pointed out that, at least among mental health professionals, when they find individuals without empathy, that's generally an indication that individual is a sociopath, which could maybe be applied to some of our Supreme Court justices, but I don't think it's necessarily a criteria that we want to stick with.
Empathy should be paramount.
Exactly. I mean, one has to be able to relate to one's fellow beings in order to make reasonable judgments.
Right. Well, thanks for your wonderful show.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for your call. Well, it looks like we're almost out of time. Somehow the morning has gone by faster than we thought. I would encourage people to log in to the Attorney General's site and check out what he's got going on about this proposed civil rights unit. You know, I think personally, I think it's a great idea. We need to be back on board with that. We need to be much more aggressive. The key is to ensure that he keeps getting the good vibes, the good word from us saying this is the right direction to go, because obviously, you know, there's going to be some resistance within our legislature at having too much stirring up by the Attorney General on some of these areas, because an aggressive pursuit of civil rights will invariably hit some nerves in Salem. So he needs to be getting good positive feedback from us and encouraged to continue on the track of being aggressive about it, and to push it even farther probably than he's at least staked out at this point. But again, you can find his website on our website at kbo.fm / Voices from the Edge, and you can log right into there. We'll also be putting the podcast up here a little later in the day of this morning's interview with Attorney General John Kroger. Well, the music is coming up. Richard's telling me it's time to go. We'll be back next week to talk about the building convergence that's coming up. And a week after that, Joanne will be back and the old team will be going again. So you have a good morning, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that deserves gold. أقسم برب الكون والعرش المجيد. On Thursday, May 28th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., KBOO will co-sponsor the Palestinian Via Dolorosa, Journey of Suffering, at Portland State University, Smith Memorial Hall, Room 101. The event will include Palestinian food and olive oil tasting, Palestinian arts and crafts, and a photo exhibit